Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Fast Facts. Basin Burnout Barbecue Cook-Off Music Festival by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Who? The Permian Basin Association of Directional Drillings holds the annual Basin Burnout as a fundraising event opportunity for the oil and gas industry to give back to the community as well as bring awareness and funds to U.S. military veterans. In 2022, Basin Burnout raised $65,000 for both local and national veteran-based charities and hopes to surpass that number Saturday. What? More than 30 barbecue teams will compete in an all-day cook-off featuring chicken, pork, ribs, brisket, beef, and even Bloody Mary mixes. For music, West Texas artists fill the bill. Chet Johnson, Jerry Hart, DJ Johnny Mack, Rick Carr Band, No Dry County, Kanan Bryce, and headliner Pecos and the Rooftops. Also happening will be auctions, family-friendly activities, and more. A complete and detailed itinerary can be found at basinburnout.com/about/itinerary. Tickets can be bought online. When? All day Saturday. Where? 4401 North Big Spring Street, the tailgate. Gas Price Divide in Midland-Odessa Widens by Stuart Doreen. Gas prices in Midland and Odessa continue to go in different directions this week, according to AAA Texas. The organization reported this week that differences still exist in the two markets, which are around 18 miles apart. In Midland, the average price of gas is $3.30, the second highest in the state, and 7 cents higher than the state average, which is $3.23. In Odessa, the average price is $3.19, which is 11 cents lower than Midland and 4 cents lower than the state average. In Midland, the average price dropped 8 cents this past week. In Odessa, that drop was 9 cents. The average drop across the state was 11 cents. In Midland, the average price has dropped 55 cents in the last year. In Odessa, the average has dropped 69 cents. The drop across the state in the last year was 54 cents. In Midland, the lowest price for gas on Thursday was $3.07, according to TexasGasPrices.com. There were 15 locations in Odessa with prices at $2.99 or lower. The lowest price was $2.94. AAA Texas reported the following averages across the West Texas region. $3.15 in Lubbock, a 7-cent decrease in the last week. $3.15 in Abilene, a 14-cent decrease. $3.16 in San Angelo, a 5-cent decrease. $3.23 in Amarillo, a 7-cent decrease. And $3.47 in El Paso, an 11-cent decrease. After climbing to its highest point in nearly 7 months last week, the statewide gas price average has receded slightly, said AAA Texas spokesperson Daniel Armbruster in the weekly report. Crude oil prices have dipped after climbing above $80 per barrel earlier this month. While retail gas prices are down from last week, fluctuations remain possible, and prices could rebound at what is expected to be a very busy summer driving season just around the corner. The Energy Information Administration noted strong demand for fuel on the week. There were no West Texas cities with averages among the lowest 5 in the state. The lowest average was $2.99 in McAllen, Edinburgh, Mission. El Paso's average was the highest among the 27 largest metropolitan areas in the state. Lions to Serve Breakfast at the Mall Saturday by Dan Corrales. All Lions in Midland were recognized Tuesday at City Hall with a proclamation for their 95 years of service. We don't do it for the thanks, but we thank you for the recognition. Whether providing free eye exams and eyeglasses to those in need, or Midland College scholarships, or sponsoring sending young Midlanders abroad, the Lions in Midland have answered the call because the one thing we do well is answer the call to serve. We ask you to join us as you always have, from the times we had a bunny as our mascot, through a pandemic when we pivoted to provide takeout in the parking lot, and now that we are back to normal. Those joining us Saturday can look forward to Ballet Folklorico, a DJ, and a juggler, and not having to juggle a mask while entertaining you, our guests, our community, our neighbors. Ask any Lion, why do you do what you do? Selfless service isn't a hobby for us. It's our way of life. It is our way of serving the needs we see in our community. Those needs aren't necessarily monetary, though. Ask any student who has competed in our peace poster contest and has had the joy of making a work of art to promote peace. Our children have such creative minds, and we serve to foster their creativity. There is something to be said for recognition if you are a young, aspiring child, or what we like to call little Leos. This Saturday, we look forward to preparing a meal we can serve and observing the happiness of seeing families sit down and spend time together laughing, filling their tummies, and looking on as our volunteers energetically create an atmosphere of joy. We'll set the tables, prepare your meal, brew some hot coffee, and set the stage for memories that you grew up with and your children and grandchildren remember for years to come. Join us this Saturday from 7 to 10 a.m. in the food court at the Midland Park Mall for We Serve Breakfast, and let the Northside Lions serve you. Our joy is introducing a little bit into yours. M-Tech provides family solutions to IT problems by Ben Schaefer. M-Tech Consulting provides an IT department for around 100 small and medium local companies that don't have one. And M-Tech Consulting appears to be a small business like many others in Midland, but make no mistake about it, this is a close-knit family business. Mike Mendoza, the owner of M-Tech, started in IT immediately following his graduation from Lubbock Christian University in 2000. Mendoza worked for industry companies like ExxonMobil, Kinder Morgan, and Trinity Midstream. In 2018, armed with a wealth of experience in IT, Mendoza decided to go his own way and start his own business. At the time, Mike's son, Michael, had been in the information technology world for around 7 years. He just kind of said, "I'm coming too." So he came along, Mike said. Mike said working with his son is a great experience that not many people get to do. Mike's strong relationship with his own father influenced him to pursue his career. Mike had the opportunity to work with his dad at ExxonMobil in the early 2000s. "Working with my sons and building this really is a family business. I love it. This will be their company one day," Mendoza said. Michael said because his father is his boss, they've been able to establish an efficient employee-manager relationship. "We sit here and talk to each other as father and son, but we also talk to each other as co-workers. I can tell him, 'Hey, I think this is what we need,' and he actually listens to me," Michael said. Michael added he's motivated to build and continue to grow the family business. From the get-go, his father understood if I want to go the extra mile or something. He understands it's because our name's on the line, Michael said. Ryan Mendoza, Michael's younger brother, also joined the business since he recently finished his schooling. Ryan admitted, "It's a lot at first, but having his father and brother around to introduce him to the industry has been ideal." The elder Mendoza said his staff treats their customers like they would want to be treated, their greatest quality. Mike said they pride themselves on word-of-mouth advertising, quality work, and one-on-one personal customer attention. Larger companies tend to have in-house IT departments, but the smaller businesses that M-Tech serves benefit from security backups, disaster recovery, IT, and network support, and much more. The IT landscape is ever-changing, according to Mike. Each day they walk into the office, the MTech family is motivated to learn, evolve, and grow. Ramsey Howard, using the same playbook for hires. Former Midland ISD Superintendent Angelica Ramsey has been shopping in her former stomping grounds and came away with quite a haul. On Tuesday night, the Fort Worth ISD board approved their leaders' purchases. In short, Ramsey hired 6 former colleagues from her short time at Midland ISD. Not long ago, it would have read off like a who's who in Midland education. Craig Quaylar, former Midland ISD Deputy Superintendent, Kelly Spencer, current Chief Operating Officer, Miguel Serrano, current School Improvement Officer, Diane Lopez Martinez, current Executive Director of Research Evaluation and Assessment, Kristen Reeves, current Director of School Leadership, Woodrow Bailey, former Chief of Human Capital. Those 6 will join previous Midland ISD colleagues who have already made the move to Fort Worth ISD. Sid Pounds, former General Counsel, Charlie Garcia, former Associate Superintendent, Veronica Ramirez, former Superintendent's Office Manager. It is quite a list and a considerable amount of talent. If one goes on social media, there have been people, including a prominent former Midland ISD employee, comment those leaving represent people who have been part of the problem at MISD. Those people obviously don't follow education governance. I figured Ramsey was going to recruit a few employees, but the total number and the position surprised me. When she came to Midland ISD, she went to different places to fill out the top of her cabinet. She could have done the same at Fort Worth ISD. My guess is recruiting to the heart of Tarrant County would be significantly easier than Midland, but she went with people she knows. Does this sound familiar to anyone? What Ramsey is doing is similar to current Midland ISD Superintendent Stephanie Howard, who has surrounded herself with people she knows through her experiences at Ector County ISD, Crane ISD, and in Midland. It is interesting those who comment about Ramsey are silent about Howard. I say let both education leaders hire who they want to hire. A coach should get to operate with a staff that he or she feels comfortable with. It doesn't matter if they come from Midland ISD, which doesn't exactly have the best track record, or Ector County ISD, which actually performed at a lower level when the two districts were ranked at the bottom of the largest school districts in the state in the previous decade. The beauty is the results will speak for themselves. If the leaders and their officers know what they are doing, the metrics will show success or a need for improvement. Ramsey basically had 1 year at Midland ISD. The metrics during that time showed enough growth took place to put Midland ISD into the group of schools statewide with a B grade. Rare territory for our district during the last 20 years. You know who also improved? Ector County ISD, and Howard has hired at least 6 to help her fill the cabinet. They include Robert Cedillo, Midland ISD's new deputy superintendent, Ashley Osborne, MISD's new associate superintendent for teaching and learning, Chad Croson, MISD's new general counsel, Fatima Munez, MISD's new Executive Director of Technology, Jesse Garcia, MISD's new Executive Director of Talent Acquisition and Development, Brandon Reyes, Midland's new Human Capital Management. Truth is, if you like Angelica Ramsey or Stephanie Howard, you can spin the departures or arrivals however you see fit. I will choose to root for both Ramsey and Howard. The students in both districts deserve the opportunity to be successful. Chances are, if Howard and Ramsey are successful, those students aren't going to care where the superintendent's staff came from. I won't either. Rock of Ages opens at MCT Friday by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Small-town Kansas girl Sherry Christian longs for a musician's life in the crazy world of Hollywood. So does Drew Boley, a barback at the legendary Bourbon Room. Between the struggles of being young and broke with big ambitions and the flirtatious acts from rock god Stacy Jacks, the entire crew embarks on a journey of moral dilemmas, life lessons, professional challenges, and a whole lot of fun. Set on a jukebox score of classic 1980s rock songs, Styx, Journey, Bon Jovi, Pat Benatar, Poison, and more, Rock of Ages will have everyone singing and laughing in every scene. Written by Chris De Arienzo, Rock of Ages ran on Broadway from 2009 to 2015, earning a fair share of awards and accolades. The Midland Community Theater team will take a whack at it starting at 7:30 p.m. Friday and Saturday and running through May 13th. Tickets can be bought at www.mctmidland.org. Cast: Lonnie Barnett, played by Tobin Brannon; Dennis Dupree, Garrett Schock; Justice Charlier, Maya Johnson and Caroline Tapp; Drew Boley, Caden Rodriguez; Sherry Christian, Kate Adam; Father, strip club DJ, Jakeith Gill; Ensemble, Tyler Klattenhoff; Mother Ensemble, Alex Calentine; Regina, Caroline Booth; Mayor Ensemble, Becca Cervantes; Hertz, Tyler Morgan; Franz Kleinemann, Gehrig Cortez; Stacy Jacks, Bryce Guerrero; Joey Primo Ensemble, Nathaniel Galindo; Producer Ensemble, Alejandro De La Rosa Azomendi; Constance Ensemble, Alicia Stofers; Waitress Ensemble, Maddie Oleg; Waitress Ensemble, Wendy Guerrero; Waitress Ensemble, Whitney Smith; Ensemble, Caitlin Klattenhoff; Ensemble, Laura Azomendi. The Sibley Spring Nature Festival is this Saturday, by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Back and free to the community, the annual Spring Nature Festival hosted by the Sibley Nature Center takes place from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday at 1307 East Wadley Avenue. Filling the center's garden will be a wide variety of entertainment and activities available and perfect for the whole community. Get your face painted by Mrs. Motzi and Greenie the Clown, or learn about spring gardening and what plants survive best from the Texas Master Naturalist. Listen to Rusty the Cowboy play his acoustic tunes while the Texas Parks and Wildlife crew provide hiking destinations and facts on the rabbits and other critters hanging around the Nature Center. Other pop-up participants include Midland, AF Basin, PBS, Casa de Amigas, the Arts Council of Midland, Midland College, Satellite Imagery with Rebecca Dodge, UTPB, the Museum of the Southwest, MCPL, Book Mobile, Midland Historical Society, AgriLife Extension, and the Boys and Girls Club, Basin Kids. Bronson Chadwick opens the must-attend event with a magic show, followed by Snake Encounters, a reptile magician liable to pull a lizard out of your ear. Tours of the garden and Sibley will be happening throughout the three-hour display and hands-on educational games, such as the solar panel sprinkler system, will be running. Crafts like coloring, planting, and more will be available throughout the garden and at different booths, while Shipley Donuts will be making rounds free of charge. For those looking for a little bit more to munch on, Scooter Dog Food Truck will be on site along with Caitlin's Snow Cones, not part of the free admission. According to the Sibley Nature Center staff, parking will be available all around the Nature Center and at Hogan Park. Trinity officials call for review of arrests. Mayor: the court system, the district attorney's office, and the police department act as three independent entities. By Stuart Doreen. Trinity School of Midland officials again called on the City of Midland to follow through with promises made by former Mayor Patrick Payton in May of 2022. It was then that Payton stated that city leaders would continue evaluating and taking a good, hard look at why we did what we did, how we can improve and get better as we seek to serve and protect this community. In November, Midlanders representing Midland Christian School and the Trinity School of Midland packed Council Chamber inside City Hall to call for that review to take place. On Wednesday, Michael McWilliams, president of the Trinity School Board, released a statement that reminded the community of Peyton's comments on that late May evening. "From the beginning, we have expressed concern about arrests being made and indictments handed down given the lack of prior investigation by the arresting officer and the district attorney's office. I have attended every day of the trial, and the testimony and evidence expressly validated these concerns. In May 2022, then Mayor Peyton asked Midlanders to let the process work itself out. He went on to say, that doesn't mean we won't continue evaluating and taking a good hard look at why we, the city, did what we did, how we can improve and get better as we seek to serve and protect this community. We will continue to assume the best of those who serve us in law enforcement, but we will seek to be even better when we come out of the other side of the process. I hope you will join me in asking the leadership of this city to follow through with those promises, to take a good, hard look, to improve, to get better, to ensure that our prosecutorial process does the hard work to protect the civil liberties of all concerned before arrests are made and juries are impaneled." Current Mayor Lori Blong said in a statement that, "In matters of criminal investigation and trials, it is important to note that the court system, the district attorney's office, and the police department act as three independent entities which provide checks and balances on one another. The Midland Police Department is a City of Midland department, but the courts and the district attorney's office are entirely separate and apart from the city. The initial arrests in this case were made by the police department with a warrant issued by the court and at the direction of the district attorney's office," Blong noted. "Certainly, this will continue to be a topic of conversation and consideration among our city leadership and council, as well as throughout our community in the days ahead." Midland County District Attorney Laura Nodoff released a statement on Thursday that said Sergeant Jeannie Alonzo drafted and signed the arrest warrants and complaints in the Trinity case, and that the only involvement in the only discussion between the Midland County District Attorney's Office and Sergeant Alonzo about the warrants happened when Assistant District Attorney Jennifer Lively offered to review any warrants prior to them being signed by a judge. ADA Lively was never asked to review any arrest warrants, Nodoff wrote. ADA Lively and I both learned that the warrants had been served both through local news outlets. The City of Midland added it will make no further comment on this issue. Five previous or current educators from Midland Christian School have sued the City of Midland, the Midland Police Department, and Detective Jenny Alonzo following the grand jury's decision to not indict in May. The five had been charged in February 2022 with failure to report a sexual assault with intent to conceal or abuse. The case is Jared Lee et al. Versus City of Midland et al. In the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Texas. The five plaintiffs are former Superintendent Jared Lee, former Principal Dana Ellis, former Assistant Principal Matthew Counts, former Athletic Director Greg McClendon, and former Head Baseball Coach Barry Russell. The lawsuit states the defendants' actions both jointly and separately deprived plaintiffs of their protected rights under the United States Constitution, federal law, and Texas state law. The city has been limited in its comments about the arrest of Trinity and MCS administrators, partially because of the lawsuit. Blong said so as recently as her mayoral campaign last fall. The statement provided on Thursday also stated the following. "This has been a difficult season in the lives of many Midland families," Blong said. "My prayer is that the events of yesterday will be the first step toward healing."
Hello, this is Denisa, reading the Midland Reporter Telegram Obituaries for Friday, April 28, 2023. John Gary Weber, beloved husband and father, passed away April 23, 2023, surrounded by his family at his home in George West, Texas. He was 90 years old. John was born December 22, 1932, in Perry, Oklahoma, to John Francis and Dovey Shea Weber. He was preceded in death by his parents, John, Jack, and Dovey Weber, two sisters, Roxanne Ware and Maxine Fontenot, and granddaughter, Elizabeth Marie Crawford. Survivors include his wife of 63 years, Patricia Weber of George West, a daughter, Paula, Philip Crawford of George West, four sons, Christopher Kimberly Weber of Edmond, Oklahoma, Patrick Karen Weber of Keller, Texas, Frederick Kimberly Weber of Edmond, Oklahoma, and Joseph Emily Weber of Madison, Wisconsin, and 13 grandchildren. Visitation will be held from 6 to 8 p.m. Sunday, April 30th at St. George Catholic Church, with a rosary to be recited at 7 o'clock. The funeral mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Monday, May 1st at St. George Catholic Church, with Father Romeo Salinas officiating. Burial will follow in the St. George Catholic Cemetery. Michael Mikey Butts, 25, of Midland, passed away unexpectedly on Tuesday, April 25, 2023. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, April 29, 2023, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Michael was born on January 20, 1998, in Bluffton, Indiana, to Brian Butts and Melinda Johnson. He spent some of his childhood in Huntington, Indiana. Michael went to Greenwood High School. He loved playing acoustic guitar. He worked for Main Events for the last 3 years. Michael is survived by his dad, Brian Butts, stepmom, Lori Butts, mother, Melinda Johnson, sisters, Mackenzie Butts, Cheyenne Pryor, brothers Colton Pryor, Sean Pryor, also survived by his grandfather, Jim Butts, and wife, Connie. Michael is preceded in death by his grandmothers, Jean Butts and Linda Kaler, and uncle, Andy Kaler.
State of the City Notebook, Hotchkiss wins WIN Award. The Midland Chamber of Commerce honored Sharla Hotchkiss this week with the WIN Award, which honors someone who made an impact through economic development. The award was created in honor of Marvin WIN, former CEO of the Midland Chamber of Commerce. Previous award WIN Award winners include Grant Billingsley, Jim Alsup, Doug Henson, and Don Evans. The Midland Chamber of Commerce also held its State of the City luncheon. Mayor Lori Blong was the keynote speaker. Her address included an acknowledgement of a younger community and a call to action when it came to collaboration between taxing entities. Students take part in YMCA conference. The first YMCA Youth in Government was organized in 1936 in the state of New York. The Texas Youth in Government was organized in 1946 by Chancellor Humphrey Lee at Southern Methodist University. Its first legislature was held in 1947. Since 1960, the following sections have been added to Youth in Government: judicial, with three components, trial court, county court, and appellate; state affairs, forum, and media; print, broadcast, social, and photojournalists; The students can qualify to participate in the Conference on National Affairs, CONA, and National Judicial Conference, NJC. Today, Youth in Government is a national program of the YMCA. The mission of Youth in Government is to help teenagers become responsible citizens and future leaders of our nation. The goal is to create an environment in which students can increase their political awareness and understanding while learning the meaning of social action through an actual experience in government. On March 2nd, six students flew to Austin to participate in the YMCA Youth in Government State Conference. They had all qualified for the state conference by participating in a district meet in November. The six students were Nicole Patel, Zoe Badia, Natalia Arias, Aiden Montes, Fabiana Aldana, and Gianluca Amico. Five of these students were participating for the first time in Youth in Government. These students chose to participate in State Affairs Forum. Their task was to write a proposal on a topic chosen from a prepared list. There were 185 students participating in State Affairs Forum with 120 proposals. Some students chose to have partners. The students were divided into two committees called First Committee, where all students presented their proposals. During First Committee, students were scored by their peers and their chair clerk teams. The highest score qualified for Second Committee. Patel and Amico qualified for Second Committee. They presented their proposals in Second Committee and were again scored by their peers. Patel qualified for General Assembly. There were 10 proposals that qualified for General Assembly. Patel's proposal, plastic bag ban for Texas businesses, was number 6 out of 120 proposals. In General Assembly, students have an opportunity to present proponent and opponent speeches. Patel gave a proponent speech for another proposal, and Badia chose to give a proponent speech for Patel's proposal. General Assembly voted to pass Patel's proposal. Patel was designated as a distinguished delegate, the highest honor a student can be given at the state conference, and has accepted an offer to attend the national conference. Supreme Court preserves access to abortion pill for now, by Mark Sherman of the Associated Press. Washington. The Supreme Court on Friday preserved women's access to a drug used in the most common method of abortion, rejecting lower court restrictions while a lawsuit continues. The justices granted emergency requests from the Biden administration and New York-based Danko Laboratories, maker of the drug Mifepristone. They are appealing a lower court ruling that would roll back Food and Drug Administration approval of Mifepristone. The drug has been approved for use in the U.S. since 2000, and more than 5 million people have used it. Mifepristone is used in combination with a second drug, misoprostol, in more than half of all abortions in the U.S. The court's action Friday almost certainly will leave access to Mifepristone unchanged at least into next year as appeals play out, including a potential appeal to the High Court. Justices Samuel Alito, the author of last year's decision overturning Roe v. Wade, and Clarence Thomas voted to allow restrictions to take effect. No other justices commented. The justices weighed arguments that allowing restrictions contained in lower court rulings to take effect would severely disrupt the availability of Mifepristone. The Supreme Court had initially said it would decide by Wednesday whether the restrictions could take effect while the case continues. A one-sentence order signed by Alito on Wednesday gave the justices 2 additional days without explanation. The challenge to Mifepristone, brought by abortion foes, is the first abortion controversy to reach the nation's highest court since its conservative majority overturned Roe v. Wade 10 months ago and allowed more than a dozen states to effectively ban abortion outright. In his majority opinion last June, Alito said one reason for overturning Roe was to remove federal courts from the abortion fight. It is time to heed the Constitution and return the issue of abortion to the people's elective representatives, he wrote. But even with their court victory, abortion opponents returned to federal court with a new target, medication abortions, which make up more than half of all abortions in the United States. Women seeking to end their pregnancies in the first 10 weeks without more invasive surgical abortion can take mifepristone along with misoprostol. The FDA has eased the terms of mifepristone's use over the years, including allowing it to be sent through the mail in states that allow access. Teen Flow Youth distribute books to organizations across Midland. The youth of Teen Flow continue to distribute books to organizations across Midland. Officials stated when the initiative wraps mid-April, more than 900 books will be distributed from Teen Flow to the following organizations: Opportunity Tribe, Midland Fairhavens, Luke 22:32, Boys and Girls Club, Casa de Amigos, Bunch Elementary, Child Evangelism Fellowship, MLK Center, Reach Network, Game Plan Counseling, Idea Public Schools, True Light Daycare, and CASA for Children of West Texas.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the oil report of the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Saturday, April 22nd. M2X Energy makes methanol out of flared gas. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Oil and gas producers are increasingly called on to mitigate, if not outright halt, methane emissions. Those efforts will come at a cost, but some technologies promise to create a revenue stream from what would otherwise be flared or vented gas. Florida-based M2X Energy is planning to initially deploy its new technology, modular transportable gas-to-methanol plants, in West Texas and North Dakota, according to Josh Brown, co-founder and chief technology officer. Brown told the Reporter-Telegram in a telephone interview the technology began as an academic exercise, working on technology that would use an internal combustion engine to take very rich flare gas and generate alternative fuels like syngas or methanol. Breakthrough Energy Ventures, founded by Bill Gates, helped found and fund M2X. Now the company's first commercial-scale system was put to work at a West Texas well pad, performing a 100-hour test. The full system will be put to work at another well pad in North Dakota in June, with different natural gas composition and flow rates to further test the technology. The pilot unit is designed to consume approximately 85,000 standard cubic feet per day of flare gas and produce 5,000 barrels of methanol per year. Construction is starting on a second trailer, and Brown said the company is scaling its fleet plans in alignment with funding. Quote, "We're spending seed money and actively looking for investors," he said. "We hope for $50 million to support 12 systems over the next 2 years. The economics are based on replacing economies of scale with mass manufacturing and automation, doing the same thing over and over to drive down costs," end quote. Generating methanol was chosen because, quote, "Methanol is easy to store and transport, is safe to handle, and has a commodities market, so we know it has value," Brown explained. "It's also easy to make," end quote. Methanol's uses vary from hydrogen carrier to low-carbon fuel to engineered lumber, low-carbon plastic to synthetic fibers. Not only does it reduce the amount of natural gas that is stranded and needs to be flared, but increases the supply of methanol, he noted. Furthermore, he said, half of methanol is now made from coal, and using natural gas instead would lower the carbon content. Customers are also paying a premium to import methane produced in South America. There has been an increased dialogue around methane emissions and around new monitoring techniques, from ground sensors to satellites, that have found a lot of new emitters that in the past were undetectable, Brown said. Quote, I think we will have a positive impact on methane emitters, he said. This is a pragmatic economic solution. We're going to depend on oil and natural gas for quite some time, end quote. Brown likes the fact M2X's technology takes a century-old technology, the internal combustion engine, that has contributed to warming and repurposing that technology and giving it new life as a conductor for clean fuels. He predicted the first customers for the technology would be smaller companies because M2X is selling a service, not capital-intensive equipment. With agreements on revenue sharing in place, he said the technology could help these smaller companies clean up their operations, meeting regulations, and most importantly, the upcoming methane intensity tax included in the Inflation Reduction Act. He added, quote, what I like about the system is we can scale down units. We can grab smaller streams, 30,000 to 50,000 standard cubic feet, that don't get addressed because they're too small for pipelines, end quote. Dawson acquires Breckenridge assets with immediate effect. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Longtime Midland seismic data provider Dawson Geophysical has agreed with Wilks Brothers LLC and Breckenridge Geophysical LLC to purchase substantially all of the Breckenridge assets related to seismic data acquisition services other than its multi-client data library. The acquisition took effect immediately, and Dawson extended job offers to relevant Breckenridge employees to continue supporting the acquired assets and businesses. Integration of the assets and business into Dawson's operations will begin as soon as possible. Quote, we are excited to welcome all the Breckenridge employees to the Dawson team, Stephen C. Jumper, Chief Executive Officer and President of Dawson, said in a press release. Continuing the quote, they bring with them needed years of operational experience at all levels, as well as long-standing customer relationships. This transaction increases our channel and vibrator energy source capacity, with the addition of like equipment allowing for improved operational efficiencies. The combination will provide flexibility in executing existing projects for both companies and provide meaningful operational and cost synergies, end quote. Total consideration for the transaction is 7 million shares of Dawson common stock. Officials stated 1.1 million shares were issued at the time of closing, and the remaining 5.8 million shares are in the form of a convertible note, which will only convert following shareholder approval at a meeting Dawson plans to convene as soon as practicable. Dawson Geophysical was founded in 1952 by L. Decker Dawson. Plans for a merger into WB Acquisition, a subsidiary of Wilks Brothers, failed last March. Accordingly, the company is operating as a controlled company, with Wilks controlling approximately 74% of combined voting power. Wilks also has the ability to elect all of the company's board of directors. Dawson's shares are listed on NASDAQ. Dawson reported revenues of $37.4 million in 2022, an increase of approximately 52% compared to the $24.6 million reported for 2021. The company narrowed its net loss to $20.4 million, or 86 cents per common share, compared to a net loss of $29 million, or $1.23 per common share in 2021. First quarter 2023 activity in the lower 48 began with a large channel count crew operating on a project that began late in the fourth quarter of 2022. After completion of that project in January, the operation of a mid-sized channel count crew began in February. Dawson is currently operating two mid-sized crews, one of which began operations in early March. Based on current available information and discussion with its clients, the company believes it will continue operation of two mid-sized crews into the third quarter of 2023. Client discussions continue to increase early in 2023, and the company believes demand for services is sufficient to maintain one to two mid-sized crews well into the second half of 2023. In a press release discussing the company's fourth quarter and 2022 earnings, Jumper said, quote, "North American seismic activity remained challenged through much of 2022 as exploration and production companies maintained their focus on capital discipline and shareholder return strategies that resulted in lower spending levels, particularly for seismic services. While market conditions remain challenging, we experienced an uptick in client discussions and bid activity late in 2022. Such improvements have carried over into 2023 and provide optimism with regards to 2023 visibility and activity levels. Our current order book reflects an increase in both the number and size of projects from recent years, as well as more geographic diversity outside of the Permian and Delaware basins. Our order book, as well as recently completed projects, includes 3D seismic surveys related to carbon capture and sequestration. Project readiness issues continue to improve as we slowly emerge from the recent deep downturn in the geophysical industry," end quote. Longtime Friendship facilitates $1.6 billion Matador acquisition. The story was written by Mella McEwen. A decades-long friendship between two Amarillo natives has resulted in the culmination of a $1.6 billion oil patch deal. Joe Ferran, founder and chief executive officer of Matador Resources, and Gary Peterson, founder of NCAP Investments, finalized the $1.6 billion acquisition of Advanced Energy Partners, an NCAP portfolio company, by Matador. The acquisition includes Advance's oil and natural gas producing properties, undeveloped acreage and midstream assets in Lee County, New Mexico, and Ward County. It also includes approximately 18,500 net acres, 99% held by production, in the core of the northern Delaware Basin. Much of that acreage is adjacent to or very close to some of Matador's best acreage, where wells with an estimated ultimate recovery of more than a million barrels of oil equivalent have been drilled. It also significantly increases Matador's inventory in primary development zones with 206 gross, 174 net operated locations in core target formations and an additional 38 gross, 35 net upside operated locations in the Wolfcamp D formation. The acreage also provides further expansion opportunities for Pronto Midstream, Matador's wholly owned midstream subsidiary. Matador now has more than $10 billion in the value of its proved oil and natural gas reserves and is ranked as one of the top oil and natural gas producers in New Mexico. Foran's family owned a pipeline construction business in Amarillo. After serving as a briefing attorney for Chief Justice Joe R. Greenhill of the Supreme Court of Texas, he entered the oil and gas industry in 1980 as vice president and general counsel to J. Cleo Thompson and James Cleo Thompson, Jr., oil producers. In 1983, he became an independent, forming Foran Oil Company with $270,000 in capital contributed by 17 friends and neighbors. In 1988, Foran was merged into Matador Petroleum, where he served as chairman and chief executive officer until its sale to Midland-based Tom Brown Incorporated in 2003 for an enterprise value of $388 million. 3 days later, he formed Matador Resources with $6 million. In 2012, Matador raised approximately $180 million in an initial public offering and began trading on the New York Stock Exchange under the ticker symbol MTDR. Today, Matador has a market capitalization higher than $6 billion. Peterson founded NCAP in 1988, growing up to become a leading provider of venture capital to the energy industry. NCAP has raised more than $38 billion since its inception. Prior to founding NCAP, he was a senior vice president and manager of the corporate finance division of the Energy Banking Group for Republic Bank Houston. His experience also includes serving as executive vice president and a member of the board of directors of Nicholas Oil and Gas Company in Houston and as a group vice president in the petroleum and minerals division of Republic Bank Dallas. In a press release, Foran commented, quote, "On behalf of the board and management, I would like to congratulate and thank everyone at Matador and NCAP for their professionalism and for everyone's efforts to close this transaction. These properties are a unique, value-creating opportunity for Matador and all of its stakeholders. Closing this transaction sets Matador up nicely for a great 2023 and an even better 2024," end quote. Energy Transfer boosts Permian presence with Lotus Deal. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Energy Transfer is making a $1.4 billion transaction to acquire Lotus Midstream Operations from an affiliate of NCAP Flat Rock Midstream. East Daily Analytics analyst A.J. Bakshani said in an analysis the deal will raise Energy Transfer's crude oil transport profile in the Permian Basin. Bakshani noted the deal will give Energy Transfer an extensive Permian crude gathering system, including the long-haul Centurion pipeline from the Permian Basin to Cushing, Oklahoma, 2 million barrels of crude storage capacity, and a 5% stake in the 1 million barrel per day Wink to Webster pipeline to the Gulf Coast. Quote, "We see the strategic rationale for ET's purchase. The company already had a joint tariff with Centurion through its Cushing to Nederland project and now can directly ship crude from the Rockies and DJ Basin to Nederland, Texas. In addition, the Permian crude gathering assets could help support volumes on ET's Permian crude egress pipelines," Bakshani wrote. Lotus Midstream Centurion Pipeline Company's services include wellhead gathering, intrabasin transportation, terminally and long-haul transportation systems. Its system, encompassing approximately 3,000 active miles of pipeline, covers major production areas of the Permian with nearly 1.5 million barrels per day of capacity. Lotus Midstream's Midland Terminal offers 2 million barrels of crude oil storage capacity and additional supply and demand connectivity, according to a press release announcing the deal. The Centurion assets, located across some of the most active areas of the Permian Basin, provide significant gathering volumes from key producers while also enhancing Energy Transfer's access to key downstream markets with consistent sources of demand. The assets provide direct access to major hubs, including Cushing, Midland, Colorado City, Wink, and Crane. The system is anchored by large-cap producer customers with firm, long-term contracts and significant acreage dedications. Upon closing during the second quarter, Energy Transfer expects to begin construction on a 30-mile pipeline project that will allow Energy Transfer and its customers the ability to originate barrels from its Midland terminals for ultimate delivery to Cushing. This project is expected to be completed in the first quarter of 2024.
Hello, this is Denisa, reading the Midland Reporter Telegram, Dear Abby column, for Friday, April 28, 2023. Siblings take different approaches toward mother. Dear Abby, our mom just turned 100, and she is in good health. I threw a big birthday celebration to honor this amazing woman. My brother and I were adopted as infants. She gave us a fabulous childhood, and we grew up to be responsible adults. My brother, who's retired, lives 6 miles from Mom, but he never goes to see her or offers any type of help he is capable of doing. He thinks a daily phone call is enough. He didn't even show up to her birthday party. I live 40 miles from Mom. I leave early for work to spend time with her each morning. My brother and I do not talk, so how do I get the point across that he needs to spend time with her? If I mention it to Mom, she constantly makes excuses for his behavior. What can I do? Frustrated sister in Arizona. Dear sister, although you and your brother were raised by the same woman, you are two different individuals. The pattern of how your brother treats Mom has been established, and because there is little time left, it isn't likely to change. You cannot control his behavior, so quit making it your problem. You are a dutiful and loving daughter. Leave it at that. Dear Abby, I have recently retired after 40 years of working. My wife, who still works, thinks I should get up every morning and take her to work. We live in a big city where crime happens, so she doesn't want to take the bus. Uber and Lyft are strangers to her. I tried teaching her to drive, even bought her a car, but she'd rather I take her. It's a 40-mile round trip. The traffic is crazy at that time. If I refuse, there are usually hard feelings. I don't want to do it every morning, only to have to pick her up in the evening at major traffic times. What can I do? Unenthused chauffeur. Dear chauffeur, Uber and Lyft are more expensive than they used to be. Even if your wife were willing to drive herself, the cost of the vehicle, insurance, and fuel would cost a bundle. Encourage her to ask if she could ride share with a coworker and repay the person for the gas. Even if it didn't happen every day, it might relieve some of the stress on you. Also, if she would be willing to take a bus to and from work on the lightest ridership day, it might make driving her more palatable. It's worth a try. Dear Abby, I became friends with a woman who constantly feels the need to put me down. She criticizes my house decor, my hair, my makeup, etc. Who does this? I like to build other women up. I no longer feel good being around her, but she's part of my larger circle. Please tell me how to handle this. Hurt and angry in the Northeast. Dear Hurt and Angry, in my experience, people who can't resist the urge to improve those around them with helpful criticism are insecure and trying to make themselves feel superior. The next time it happens, tell her that when you think you need her opinion, you will ask for it. Then, to the extent you can, avoid her.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.